Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, today we're not going to be talking about the virus. Maybe we'll slide somehow into that with the economy. But we're going to take a look at numbers. We're going to figure out what is going on with this unbelievable economy we have. And the guy who's going to straighten us out on this is named Dr. Lou Pantusco. He's a professor of economics at the hallowed halls of Winthrop University, right across the street. You had to travel a long way to get here, didn't you?
I did.
Is it hot out there?
It's very hot. It took me about 25 seconds.
So tell everybody a little bit about Lou.
I started at Winthrop about, this is going to be my 25th year. I'm a professor of economics and recently became the chair of the accounting, finance, and economics department three years ago. And I've lived in Rock Hill the entire time I've been here in this area, and have three daughters. I've been married for over 30 years. So
good for you.
Very established in the area and love it and love South Carolina.
And how do you like what's going on behind Winthrop on White Street with all that development?
Yes, it's great, and I look forward to it. Rock Hill has just become such a great place to live. It's always been a nice family and community, but it's great for young people now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plenty to do. Okay, so, Professor, I'm in your class, and the first question I'm going to ask you is, what is going on with the economy? It seems like it's just almost too good to be true, but yet I'm scratching my head saying, how can this be?
Yeah, I think you really do have to start with COVID, because before that, you know, everything was the growth rates were pretty consistent, and you know, we had some money supply growth that was pretty consistent and wage growth that was pretty consistent. Everything was kind of on cruise control. And then when COVID hit, what it did is it absolutely destroyed a couple sectors of the economy, in particular retail and hospitality and leisure, overall, and transportation. And overall, we lost about 20 million jobs. So that's where the story begins. And, you know, when those people lost their jobs, the government stepped in and just started to try to stimulate the economy. And you know, and the way they did it is they started to spend money. And so over a period of maybe a year, the Fed Reserve Bank's balance sheet actually increased by over $4 trillion. And that's the start of it. So now what happens when the Fed puts $4 trillion in? Where does that money come from and where does that money go? And I think that's where the story becomes very interesting. So in this case, what typically happens is when the Treasury or the Congress spends money, they have to find ways to, you know, resources. And they didn't want to increase taxes. Tax revenues slipped. So the Federal Reserve Bank just came in and bought all their Treasury bonds and really just created money. It was all of a sudden there was $3 trillion more there, and another trillion more in the banking system through mortgage-backed securities. And so all of a sudden, there's a bunch of money in the economy. And that's kind of where we are. Savings rates were skyrocketed because people had nowhere to spend their money. And now we're all free. And so now we have all this money to spend, and the economy's booming.
Some people would say, okay, so the Fed steps in, and they basically print $3 trillion worth of money, mm-hmm. and there's really not much backing that up. It's just new cash that's in there.
It's exactly what it is, and it's just like, just imagine waking up in the morning and just you had $3 trillion in your bank account. I'd take, you know, $300 would be nice, but just that's basically what happened. Is that money just went to the federal government, and then the federal government finds their ways to spend it. And what they did is, which is, if you want to inject money into the economy, there's ways to do it. As we know, there's infrastructure bills and things like that. So you can start spending money, and that goes in slowly. The most direct way to do it is just give people checks, and right. then these people are going to go out and spend that money, and they did. That's where we're at.
So they get all these checks, and they're starting to spend money. And meanwhile, the economy has been shuttered down. Nobody's working. They're all at home. And we run into this supply chain issue, which is still killing us right now. We haven't got enough goods and services to meet the demand.
Well, that's another component of the story is the labor market. So what's going on with the labor market is, of course, we lost all those jobs. But then in place of those jobs, they had a couple different unemployment insurance extension. So it started out with $600 a week, and that was money that was added on to a state's average unemployment insurance benefits. So if you, for instance, had a job where you're making $500, and typically a replacement rate would be 50%, so you'd make $250 a week in unemployment insurance. Now add $600 on top of that, so you're making $850 a week off of a job that you were previously making $500 a week on, tax-free, and it takes away these incentives for anybody to work. Now that was stopped, and then they replaced that with the $300 a week extension, and then 26 states said, no, that's just too much. It's a disincentive for our workers. We need these people to go back to work, especially in leisure and hospitality and retail, because wage rates are so low. So you're getting, you're replacing these jobs with people who are able to sit home and make more money. And so was that formula that wasn't working for the states, created a lot of openings and jobs, a lot of lines and restaurants, and a lot of supply chain issues. And now now we have a lot of states that have just gone to this, okay, let's get rid of that $300 a week. And if you look at the numbers, which I actually have here, the majority of those states, the bottom 10 states for recovery, if you just look at unemployment rates as a recovery, are states that have maintained the federal extension. And nine of the top 10 states have gotten rid of the unemployment insurance extension. So it is clearly a disincentive to work. And I'm not saying that some people don't need it, because a lot of people do. Their kids are home and they can't go back to work. But I'm just saying it is clearly a disincentive to getting people back to work.
In fact, I had some statistics that I forgot to bring here today. State of South Carolina has had a couple of good benchmarks here the last few weeks in terms of people who are returning to work as a direct result of what you're talking about. We still have a long way to go, but ending, as Governor McMaster did, the extra bonus, which I think ended, what, the end? Was it the end of June?
I think it was the middle of June.
Yeah. Middle of June, whatever it was. That has got people's attention, and they're now trying to go back to work. So we are sitting here right now, right here in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and there's not a block that you can walk around that doesn't have, we're hiring, we're hiring, we're hiring, we're hiring.
Right.
And what do you think it's going to take? Is it going to take an end to all of these stimulus programs to get people back, back out of their apartments and their bedrooms?
There's, currently there's over 10 million job openings in the country, and there's only about 8 million people that are unemployed. So you wonder, okay, well, that's, but that's happened before, where we have more job openings than people that are unemployed. And what we're trying to do, though, in this case, and if you're talking about South Carolina, is we're trying to get people to enter the labor force. So the latest numbers are that we have about a 57.5% labor force participation rate. Nationally, it's about 61-62%. But we have a lot of people that are sitting on the sidelines. So labor force participation is basically people who are able to work, ages 16 to 65. And we only have 57% of those people who are able to work that are actually working. And so what are we going to do to try to get these people incentivized to come into the workforce? And know, there's a lot of things that we've seen with the PPP and other things that the government are trying to help the small businesses. But they're the ones who are going to get hit the most if wages go up. Because what you're starting to see is these companies, the bigger companies, are offering these bonuses. They're not giving raises. They're giving bonuses because that's a one-time commitment, where if they increase your wage, it's commitment for life or as long as you work there. So they offer these bonuses in an effort to, in a way, to try to get the workers to come into the market. And but it's not really enough to sustain it. And so we're kind of in a point right now where you just have to wonder how much more can these small businesses take? You know, can they pay these higher wages that these workers are demanding?
Well, just take a look at the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sitting right in one right now. Mm-hmm. I know for sure they could use some more workers here. Mm-hmm. I know his costs of goods have been going up mm-hmm. steadily. The ability to get, you know, product A like he's always been getting is challenged almost on a weekly basis. He may have to get product B or product C. And the whole cost is going up. And, of course, at some point, it has to be adjusted on his pricing board back here. And then you wonder, that's probably going to happen everywhere. So then we get this thing called inflation. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And there are different causes of inflation, but the one that's the most sustainable is increases in the money supply. The money has to go somewhere. So when money supply increases, inflation increases. So the basis behind all of this inflation is going to be that injection of money into the economy. And that's what we're seeing. And I've been contacted by news stations for the last couple months. Can you come talk about the increase in price of lumber, the increase of, I said, chicken, the increase in the price of liquor? I mean, it's everywhere. And it's all these different stories that are all based on the same answer, which is the supply chain and workers not being able or not going back to work for the wages that they were previously making.
Now, we add to that, and I'm not trying to get into a political discussion here, but we've had a radical change in our energy policy in this country. And just 6 or 7 months ago, we were energy independent. Mm-hmm. We were actually exporting oil. Now, we've killed the Keystone Pipeline, and we've killed fracking, and we've killed drilling on federal lands. And we're crying to OPEC, give us some more oil so we can get our prices under control. But the bottom line is the consumer in this town is spending almost $1 a gallon more for gas. And we're on the better side of what's going on across America.
Right. And the inflation report just came out, I think, last week. And it's a 41% increase in energy prices and in fuel and gasoline. And that's nationally. So that's pretty amazing to look at that increase. And the other big, you know, the other big increase has been, you know, has been used cars and trucks. But those are the ones that are driving this, mainly the energy, though. Because we don't have to buy a used car. We can keep our old car. But the fact is that the energy is driving this increase. And energy affects, or oil prices affect everything, right? Because it affects transportation, it affects businesses, every business.
The United States Postal Service announced yesterday that they're going to put a surcharge on all packages between 25 cents a package and $5 a package, depending on the size, because of the price of fuel.
Yeah, that's I didn't know that. Yeah, it trickles down, and it's one whenever there's, and that's the worst. You know, again, from a macroeconomic standpoint, the worst scenario is what we call a supply side increase, right? An increase in cost affects the aggregate supply curve, and it brings about the worst of both worlds, right? You get high inflation, but you also get high unemployment typically with that, and you're also going to get low GDP. So having costs rise is the worst. Having costs fall is the best thing that can happen for the economy. And right now we're in a situation where wages really haven't gone up that much. They haven't, because I think the businesses just, like I said, bonuses have gone up. But if you look at the wages, they haven't really increased that much over the last year. But people are paying so much more. And so the average worker, the average person is backwards. You know, if inflation goes up by 5 or 6% and you're making 3% more, you've lost purchasing power.
Yeah, and we talked, of course, about oil and gasoline, but let's just talk about food. I mean, you go to the grocery store, every category is up some percentage, and your dollar is going, you have to spend more money to get the same kinds of things, if you can get the same kinds of things, because of the old supply chain thing. Yeah. All right, we're going to take our mid-program break, and then when we come back, we're going to ask the professor over here how we're going to solve all these problems as we continue our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2 to make that 6 days a week. Slice, 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 garden, 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 the way we do it. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in and locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax, you're home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 410-6.
We're glad to see things are getting back to normal, and it's great to see everyone eating in and us getting a chance to catch up with y'all. This is Charlie Ruffalo. If you don't have time to sit and enjoy your lunch with us, I would suggest you order online at mysubstationii.com, and you can be in and out of the store in under 5 seconds. Just give us enough time to make your order before you arrive. We're open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 10, and we're still able to do catering 7 days a week. Once again, I want to thank you for your support through this pandemic. It means a great deal. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Dr. Lou Pentusco is with us today. He's a professor of economics at Winthrop University, and he's got a head full of knowledge. I got to ask you before we get into solutions. The United States Congress right now is spending an awful lot of money. They've approved, well, almost approved, $1.2 trillion for real infrastructure, bridges, roads, broadband, that kind of stuff. And they're now toying with $3.5 trillion more for what I'll call human infrastructure. Lots of free stuff. Let's change all this. Blah, blah. Let's just say all that passes. Let's just say it's well over $4 trillion, $4.5 trillion. What does that do to the economy? Because we ain't got $4.5 trillion. We already had the Fed buy $4 trillion, create $4 trillion. Now we're going to come up with $4 trillion
more? Well, the hope is that they'll be as efficient with their spending on this as they were with the last, you know, the last round of stimulus, which means it won't happen fast. And if they go slowly and the money kind of trickles into the economy, there's hope that, you know, the inflation won't be too out of control. But the bottom line is we can't really afford that much as a country when you're already $4.5 trillion in debt and you add another $3.5 trillion without other revenue sources. Then that's just too much, and it's too inflationary. So you know, my it's not possible for them to really to do that over time. In a year or a quarter or whatever, it's going to have to be, we're going to spend this much money over the next 10 years. And then if that happens and it goes in slowly, there's possibly that could be absorbed.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the stock market does, which is going up, up, up. I mean, when they got the first piece of the infrastructure bill, $1.2 trillion, stock market bounced up. They thought it was great. This is good for America.
If you think about stocks as a price, right? It's a price like any other commodity, right? And if there's more money, prices go up, and stock prices are going to go up with more money. And Wall Street is, somewhat addicted to the Federal Reserve Bank's constant influx of money, and they get very nervous if there's any hint of this slowing down, these injections slowing down. So there's no doubt that the stock market is going to, wants that. They want that growth or that increase in the money supply.
And watch what happens when the Fed just whispers about interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The stock market does not like it when they talk about interest rate hikes. And they're so historically low. I mean, it's just, wow, free money.
Exactly. If you think about that, you borrow money for, 2 or 3%. And I refinance at 1.99, which is so cool. And then inflation goes up by 5%. I'm giving the bank back, cheaper dollars that are less valuable than the ones they gave me. They're losing money on me, and so it is the time to buy or to borrow. It's a good time to borrow because inflation is higher than the interest rates, not on credit cards, but on mortgages and. That's the case.
All right. Well, despite all of this, the economy is very hot. It's just very robust, as you point out. People have got this extra cash thanks to the federal government. They want a place to spend it. They're out trying to buy stuff. Many times they can't buy it because it's not there, but they got the money and they're spending it. So here's a scenario. I am going to send Air Force One to the Charlotte Douglas Airport, and it's going to ask for, they just want one passenger. His name is Lou Pantusco, and we're going to put you on Air Force One, and we're flying you down to the great center of knowledge of the whole world, Washington, D.C., and we're going to give you some one-on-one time with Mr. Biden, our president, and whatever administrative staff he wants to have there. And they have promised they're going to listen. They're going to keep their mouths shut, and they're going to listen because they really want to know what can be done to stabilize what's happening here in the economy right now. So you're going to have roughly 3, 4, 5 minutes with the president because he's a very busy guy, and you'll have his undivided attention. What are you going to say to him?
Well, I think what I would do is I would start by saying, we need to help. There's no question that there's people who need help in this country, and I like the idea of the government being able to jumpstart that. But I think we're involved in a lot of things that are very wasteful. So, I'm in education. I think I would promote education. I say that if there's one great way to spend money in this country, help people get an education. If you get an education, they're going to end up being, you're not going to have to take care of them for the rest of their lives. They're going to be able to buy houses. They're going to be able to pay taxes. They're going to, if you're statistically speaking, I mean, you think about your own story or so many people's story and my story. You may not have grown up really, really wealthy, but you got an education and now you can raise a family, put your kids through high school or college or whatever.
Yep.
So I would promote education. That would be my big thing. And, how they do that is another story, but our public schools and around this country, they're not doing great. Whether it's high schools or public universities, I think there's a way to promote that and help them. It's not all about tech schools. I mean, people think, oh, it's all about a tech school, but not everybody's made for tech school, And so, I think that we need to promote and help our four-year institutions, help people who don't have the money to go to college, and just do everything we can so that they will not need the government in the future.
So, now time's for questions from Mr. Biden. he's going to, I hope he would ask, do you think we're spending too much money down here in Washington? Do you think we should try to balance the budget? And you would say to him as an economist,
absolutely. I think absolutely there's a lot of waste, and you know, there's so much inefficiency with the way they spend. And you just look at, you know, this the people who actually need the money get such a little amount because there's so much, they just throw a blanket on something and they say, okay, everybody who makes below $150,000 a year gets the stimulus check. And they just, everybody with a small business who applies can get the PPP money. Not every small business needed it. And some of them needed it more. So that's where there's inefficiencies all over the government. And I would do my best to try to get rid of those.
Should I be concerned as the president of the United States that I'm adding more debt to the nation, just as my predecessors have, that we're sitting here with $30 trillion? Should that concern me, that we're going to potentially go upside down? You're an economist. Mm-hmm. Tell me. I'm the president. See, I'm asking these questions.
The national debt's just we can't continue doing what we're doing. So things have to become more under control, and the Federal Reserve Bank can do a big part of that, or play a big part in that by saying, you know, we aren't going to buy, because if we're not going to buy, then if you think about it, if the Fed buys, it's new money going into the economy. If I buy a bond, that's money that Lou Pantusco can't spend anymore, right? So it's not going to cause inflation. It's just it's a transfer of me spending it versus the government spending it. So that's not necessarily inflationary, but new money is inflationary. So they if the Federal Reserve Bank didn't buy all these bonds, then it wouldn't be all this new money in the economy, and it would be less inflation. So basically it's just like saying, how are we going to get the money? They have to be more rational and about how they're going to actually pay for what they're doing. And then it becomes a philosophical question of, well, you know, should the federal government be involved in everything, or should it be private businesses? And that's, you know, probably beyond our conversation, because it becomes very political.
Well, you're right, very political. I have a friend of mine who always says, you know, if you believe in America and the very principles upon which we were founded, you know, as a capitalistic society, that we're going to be okay. We'll get through this, whatever it is. But there's a lot of people, and I don't know whether you would agree or disagree with this, that would say with all these programs and spending and what we're doing here, that we're drifting towards socialism, that we really are changing how this country works.
Yeah, I have a chart that shows like national debts, and you know, national debts always grow during a recession because the government wants to inject money. And if you look at the last like three recessions, the amount of debt is just going so high after each one, significantly higher. So let's say, for instance, you know, we're looking at the 2001 recession, and the national debt goes up by $300 billion, and then the 2008 recession, national debt goes up by $1.2 trillion, and then the 2020 recession, the national debt goes up by $4 trillion. You know, so it's like they just keep getting more, the government keeps taking more and more ownership of these recessions, thinking that they're the answer. And it's not necessarily, like if you look at unemployment rates and GDP growth rates right now, we don't really need another injection of money. Now, do we need infrastructure? Yeah, I think that's all a good conversation. But we don't need this for the economy to grow. We just need, you know, this is a want, not a need.
So do you think, based on, we only have about 15 seconds left here, do you think that if we keep following this track, that we're drifting more and more to socialism?
Yeah, if you're just looking at the percentage of, you know, if you just say, okay, what's the percent of government spending to total spending in this country? Absolutely.
Lou Pantusco, thank you very much for being with us today. Keep up the good work at Winthrop University. We'll do this again. All right?
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2, the magical way. Slice, garden. High school football tonight, Football City USA, starting at 5, broadcast at 4 o'clock. First kickoff at 5:30 over here at District 3. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.